Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRue Show. It's Saturday, March 22nd, 2008, and we're live now from 3 to 4 in the afternoon Eastern Time in the United States. And we have, as the focus of our live discussion today, doom has struck. Facing and using the historic opportunity we have for survival for civilization. I am not exaggerating. I'm actually quoting with doom has struck from a statement released March 17th, 2008 by Lyndon LaRouche, who issued his policy recommendation for three steps to survival. And this is now, we're actually in the middle of a mobilization to mass circulate and discuss what has to be done. There are 250,000 hard copies of this flyer put out by the LaRouche Political Action Committee that have been printed and many points around the world, including, I think, at least eight languages, including Arabic, Japanese, and others, have this in circulation. So I am very glad to welcome here in the studio live with me Tony Papert from EIR News Service. Welcome, Tony. My name's Marcia Mary Baker, and I'll be moderating the discussion. And the LaRouche Youth Movement is represented today from Washington, D.C. by Francisco Medina. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
And also partly from California, right, Frank?
Yes, from Los Angeles.
And we're very glad to have from the Detroit office, Kalina Hemphill. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good. As I say, we're not exaggerating, and I'd like to just open up the discussion by letting people know that EIR News Service is right now literally editing and finishing writing a whole special package issue that has as this title, What Must Be Done to Avert the Greatest Crash in History? And we're going to be printing an overrun of that, so it can be in hard copy in Washington, D.C., and in other key points in North America and elsewhere. And as you know, and I put a pitch right here at the beginning, people should subscribe, donate, and so forth, but you'll find this special issue within about 72 hours or so posted on the EIR News Service website, which is www.larouchepub.com. And there's more to the barrage of literature that's circulating. But first, Tony, if we could start with you with this question. There, you've been in discussions with Mr. LaRouche personally in the recent 10-day period, especially after the March 12th webcast, which Mr. LaRouche gave in Washington, D.C. That was titled Averting Doom. But really, you could say last weekend was a kind of break point with the news of the White House action with this Bear Stearns operation and so forth. But how would you kind of sum up the situation we're in terms of it being historic?
It's a new and much sharper downshift in the collapse into a Weimar 1923 style hyperinflationary collapse. The system collapsed actually in last year around July, August. And since December 17th, the U.S. Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank, and to a lesser extent the Bank of England, have been creating electronic money, to a tune of trillions, and lending it to basically banks and other financial institutions, in order to precisely avoid the need to rescue a major financial institution from collapse. I mean, there's been smaller ones which have either been collapsed or been rescued during the period, but because the period began with collapse of some hedge funds and so on. But everything they were doing in this massive creation of credit in unprecedented amounts since mid-December of last year has been for the purpose of not having to step in and rescue one of the major financial institutions. But that's exactly what they had to do, or felt they had to do, last Sunday night. Of course, it was not only a rescue but a ripoff, a theft. It was illegal. There is no authority for the Federal Reserve to lend to a non-bank like Merrill Lynch. But this was the number five so-called investment bank and non-bank financial institution in the United States. It was imminently bankrupt. And just for that one illegal action alone, they have already created tens of billions of dollars of credit. As people know, they announced on Sunday, this was done by the Fed, but it was forced on them by the president's working group, with the so-called plunge protection team, and the crazy man in the White House. But what they announced Sunday alone was a new unlimited credit facility lending to most broker, the primary securities brokers, again, mostly non-banks. They announced a $30 billion backstop of worthless securities in Merrill Lynch. And
Bear Stearns, or no?
In Bear Stearns, yeah, sorry. And then since, they say that since then, they spent $5 billion a day each of Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in this scheme beyond the, what I mentioned. It's not clear what they spent it for. They've loaned $13 billion a day Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in the new credit facility, which they created on Sunday. So this is unprecedented. And people are furious, of course, that the Federal Reserve, that Secretary Paulson, and that Bush have jumped in with inflationary fiat money of unlimited amount, so far maybe $50 billion or something, into Bear Stearns, when they're doing absolutely nothing for the 80% or even lower 90% of the American population who's losing everything, beginning with losing their homes to foreclosure. Absolutely nothing, or nothing worth mentioning, is being done about that crisis. So that's what I'd say. We're at a new step function, which will, if it's allowed to proceed, it will bring us to the situation of Weimar Germany in the winter of 1923, when a hyperinflationary explosion decapitated the economy, stopped all economic activity. I mean, Germans would have been wiped out by hunger and disease had not the U.S. and others stepped in at that point. But at this point, it's a world crisis. It's not a U.S. crisis, although its important aspects, of course, are in the U.S. But it's a crisis of the world system as it exists today, and there's nobody to step in from outside to rescue us. We have to rescue ourselves in the short time remaining to do it, whatever that short time may be. Certainly a period of months at most.
Well, right. And let's turn right to Washington, D.C., because I think that there's this whole period of spring break, Easter period, Congress. Nancy Pelosi's off causing trouble in Asia. We'll come back to that later. But, Francisco, you've been there all along on this scene. Can you describe or characterize any of the reaction or the subjective reaction that might have shifted as you and colleagues in the LURSS Youth Movement have been reaching people either on the Hill or around Washington?
Well, yeah, we've been getting a lot of reaction. We're out organizing in Chinatown here in D.C., and you had all these folks from Maryland and different places whose basketball teams are playing in the whole March Madness tournament. We would talk about how their tickets were worth more than Bear Stearns, and people were really, really into that. But, I mean, it is crazy. We're in a completely mad situation. The Congress is too small to act. You know, as individuals, they don't look at themselves as being capable of actually dealing with the situation. And so they're just waiting for things to drop. Everybody up there on the Hill knows what LaRouche was saying about the, you know, huge amount of just funny money in the financial system, how that was bringing it down. We've been up there for years telling them this. And so the authority that we were bringing in, you know, with the Bear Stearns collapse and saying, well, you know, we told you that this was going to happen, really had people, you know, grabbing the literature up on the Hill. But it's been a real, a shock that, you know, they're having to come out and, you know, and say, well, yeah, you guys were right. You know, a lot of these newer people up there. I mean, I've only been here about a month and a half. I'm from Los Angeles. We've gone into a lot of these different conferences. The League of Cities were out here, which consisted of city councilmen, mayors. You had the National Association of County Officials. They were out here. And every one of these conferences, a big component of it is the discussion around the subprime mortgage collapse. A lot of these things were covered by C-SPAN. A couple of our members were videotaped for the C-SPAN website asking questions just about what was happening, you know, with Bear Stearns the week before that it happened, saying that, hey, doesn't it look like a banking crisis? You know, you had this Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, which the LaRouche Political Action Committee has drawn up. It's been passed in Rhode Island, both of their state houses. It's been passed through cities like Philadelphia, Newark, Indianapolis, you know, talking about protecting the real, you know, banking functions of the institutions and not the, you know, absurd deregulated securities market that, you know, nobody knows how many trillions of dollars exist in this, you know, the system, and it's all based on just this belief. And these people, there's one man in particular, part of the Senate Finance Committee, a staffer, a permanent staffer there, he just lied through his teeth saying, oh, well, we haven't done any bailouts. And I, you know, this was before Bear Stearns, right? And I had mentioned Countrywide and what happened with that situation, how Bank of America was given some money to take over Countrywide. And he just you know, changed the subject. And so you're seeing that these people just don't want to deal with the crisis. And because there's no authority, I mean, people know Paulson and these guys, they're just trying to buy time. But since there's no authority, they're just waiting for things to drop, and then they're going to be reactions to that. But, you know, here we are with the HBPA, with what LaRouche has been saying, and, you know, they're really having to, you know, I guess you can say we're what's actually dropping. You know, we're dropping the HBPA on their desk. So.
Well, let's turn for a moment to the state capital of Michigan in Lansing. I'll just throw in here, Kalina, you can talk about it. But I understand that among the state capitals where we blanketed the offices with this LaRouche's emergency three measures steps for survival were Harrisburg this week, Boston State House, and
Albany, New York.
Albany, New York. You can throw in others, but Kalina, what do you find about the state or local reaction after, in contrast or comparison to Washington?
Well, Michigan is, you know, an interesting state because the Midwest in particular has been hit pretty hard by deindustrialization, and they were actually one of the first states to take up actually introducing LaRouche's Homeowners and Bank Protection Act through some feisty support that we have here in the House of Representatives. But through some counteractivity, it's been stalled in the Banking Committee, and it's been sitting there for a number of months. So we've taken a different approach by trying to get a couple of different key individuals to try and pull it out of the Banking Committee. Now, we actually took the approach this Monday by making a round of calls to every single individual in the offices of the House of Representatives this week to just see who we could speak with, not aides individually per se, but representatives themselves, because we knew that this crisis was something that everybody would be talking about. And out of, you know, 110 representatives in the House of, you know, House of Rep side, we were actually able to set up anywhere from 10 to 15 meetings with reps or chiefs of staff, specifically with this crisis, and getting LaRouche's HBPA moved through the House of Representatives and out onto the floor to get it passed. And this is pretty significant because of all of the stalwart you know, resistance that we've run into. Now, we've also taken the approach that our New England cohort have taken and actually gone across the aisle to the Senate side and tried to get a concurrent resolution on the Senate side. And we've met with a number of offices, including, you know, some of the key senators in the Michigan Senate, to try and draft a similar resolution to actually get this passed. Because in Rhode Island, you know, it was a chance meeting with a senator who took it up on his own to really draft something that was already in the House of Representatives, and he got it pushed through even before the House of Representatives got it on the floor and passed. So we went to Lansing on Wednesday with our entire office and had a real, you know, breakthrough, because the entirety of Lansing was really abuzz with this crash. And, you know, I think the potential that's going to come out of it is something that we'll be able to garner support for the next couple months, to really see some action.
Well, when you said that about the big reaction, let me ask anyone here too about the making use of the DVD, the 80-minute, the firewall, saving the nation. We've had, I understand, the LaRouche Political Action Committee. We've been able to mass produce a certain amount, in addition to others copying it or downloading it and so forth and so on. But in Washington, have you found special reaction to that, Francisco?
We had a couple students come in from George Washington University to take a look at that. But yeah, I mean, overall, if people haven't seen it, it goes through the hyperinflation of Weimar Germany and the arguments made of this is exactly what's going on today. And it gives a whole, you know, a swath of history from the transformation of the maritime-based powers with the British Empire, the British East India Company, and what you have with the Transcontinental Railroad, the American system, Henry Carey, and what LaRouche is doing today. And, you know, our, you know, role as educators for the Congress and advisors for the Congress on this new system that we're going to create. And I've gotten some real reactions from people, not necessarily in Congress, but in some of the institutions outside of Congress, where, you know, people from the State Department who have had questions as to, well, why is Africa not connected to the Saudi Arabia or the Arabian Peninsula, you know, with rail, or why isn't, you know, Europe connected with rail to the Arabian Peninsula? And this video has answered a lot of questions that people, because of their lack of understanding of a physical economy and the history of the American system, they are now getting answered as to, oh, so this is the actual fight. This is what we're in. You know, this is why we have a monetary system, you know, based on looting operation of the rest of the world, instead of a system that's been able to internally develop countries, regions of the world, which is what, you know, we're calling for as the basis of a new economic system. You know, base your wealth on that which is beneficial physically for mankind, you know, as a whole, as the principle. You know, base that idea of wealth on the creativity of mankind, you know, throughout the world. Because that's really where you're going to get the growth of your population and of culture and whatnot. And the video, you've had that 80-minute video. You had a trailer prior to that. On the website, you have a number of different things. Now, you know, one thing I'd like to point people to is this great thing that happened at the Los Angeles City Council, where the LaRouche Youth Movement took the street theater into the City Council during the public comments. And I've showed a few contacts, you know, here in D.C. that, and they just loved it. Like, they couldn't believe that we had Arnold Schwarzenegger, a youth member dressed up like Schwarzenegger, testifying before the Los Angeles City Council, talking about his plan to cut the throats of the poor, of the sick, of the elderly, you know, with his 10% across the board budget cuts as a way to deal with the $16 billion budget shortfall for the next fiscal year. So we're saying the things that people are too afraid to say, you know, because they want to keep their, you know, position in, you know, city council or as mayor or as congressman, they can't come out with the truth that what we're dealing with is fascism, you know, and, you know, we've laid it down, you know, before people that we've been targeting, like Michael Bloomberg, his public-private partnerships, Felix Rolleton, you know, we've intervened on and intersected here in D.C., you know, calling them out and letting the public know what these guys really are and what their plans really are. And we've changed history because of it. You know, Michael Bloomberg is now, you know, running scared from wherever the LaRouche Youth Movement may be. You know, he doesn't show up right where he's planned to show up at. And it's because of our presence, you know, being felt in Los Angeles in an institution like City Hall there, in D.C., with the congressional work, at the Senate Finance Committee meetings, you know, at press conferences where Bloomberg and Randell and Schwarzenegger are touting privatizing of, you know, interstate highways, water conveyance systems, all these types of things, where we've put the question to them and the public. This is Mussolini corporativism. This is fascism. And I mean, we're having a really good effect.
Yes.
Right. I understand there's a briefing title that to staff that LaRouche was recommending in discussions with the LaRouche Youth Movement today regarding a leader of the looting, these public-private partnerships, or what you could call picking pocket programs. And, you know, it's Easter weekend, so poor old Satan this weekend has a plea. Satan's plea is, America, please don't send Felix Rohatyn back down here. We don't want him either. So I guess that's where these people should go. But speaking of the enemy, knowing your enemy, or this process you're describing of helping people focus and on, you know, the evil that's around and what you have to fight and what the fight is, Tony, let me ask you about the war danger, the issue of the big flare up in Asia over Tibet, that's part of the perpetrated by the same people who were pushing the crash.
Yeah, it's not really a big flare-up over Tibet. It's that the British have determined to get a new Eurasia war going, which takes the transatlantic powers, the European Union, the United States, and throws them up against Russia, India, and China. And they've leaned on the U.S. government, and they've leaned on the European governments to move in that direction. And that's what shows up as, you know, in the lying media, that shows up as some kind of rebellion in Tibet, which is not the case at all. I mean, what happened there is, as the economist from London, the London Economist reporter from Lhasa, who's a longtime China guy, speaks Chinese, has been in China, reporting in China for years, as he said in The Economist, what happened in Lhasa was a race riot where certain gangs of Tibetans set fire to the shops in Lhasa owned by Chinese and other non-ethnic Tibetan shopkeepers, and killed them, killed some of them, burned their shops, beat a whole lot of them up. And the Chinese responded with great restraint. They, in fact, didn't do anything until the riots had ended. So, but this, what this is the British bid to get not just Britain, but their dupes in Washington, like Nancy Pelosi, who went to Dharamsala, India, where the Dalai Lama lives in exile, and babbled to him about human rights and this and that and the other thing. It's a plot by Britain to get a big Eurasia war going. Now, as the Asians will have nothing to do with it, as Lyndon LaRouche pointed out, India sent people to Dharamsala and told the Dalai Lama that he had to say publicly where he stood on this stuff, and if he supported these riots, or if he supported so-called independence for Tibet, which is part of China, he was going to have to leave India. So they would have nothing to do with it. There's no other Asian country that will have anything to do with it at this point. They know what it is. But we have idiots, unfortunately, in Washington. We have the Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, who supports the British on this and who's going for this war.
And I guess, could you characterize it's the part of the same scene where you get kind of on autopilot, Dick Cheney, maybe sent there by Lynn Cheney, you know, still talking about we have to be making wars, yeah. Iran is a big threat. I mean, if you fill out the picture, it's, it includes that, right?
Yeah, I think so. Cheney, of course, moved and got Admiral Fallon fired, who was trying to make sure there was no war in that area, and then Cheney took off for the area himself.
Now, one thing about this activating all kinds of assets to destabilize situations, the point three, many people who listen or are with us live today or listen later by telephone or archive on the website know that LaRouche has mentioned for months, a couple of years more, that we need emergency collaboration by major governments, India, China, Russia, to work out fixed exchange rates and deal with this situation. Everything, food, you know, you can the crisis we have to hand, any of this shows why we should do this. So this orchestration of turmoil is just in a direct hit at this.
Yeah, LaRouche has called for a four-power agreement between U.S., Russia, China, and India on an international fixed-rate exchange system and great projects of development which require a fixed-rate international exchange system because you can't have long-term loans without it. So he said that without that agreement, which other countries will immediately come in on, that there is no exit out of the crisis. That's the way we rebuild our way out of this crisis, which was very similar to Roosevelt's prospect for after World War II, had he lived. But as Marcia said, while LaRouche has called for an agreement between these great powers to lead the way out of the crisis, the British are determined to start a war among these powers.
So, in our organizing, encouraging or instigating or provoking people to have a sense that there is this pathway out of it, and this other stuff is just a lot of, excuse me, British crap, brutish empire crap. What do you, in Washington, Francisco, would you say also on this, we've been otherwise talking about economics as such, but do you think there's an uptick or more responsivity to people understanding this kind of thing?
Yeah, I guess if you just keep on attacking Obama for not saying anything, and you know, it really, really gets people. Because, I mean, you do have a heightened sense of things. How much does food cost today? How much does gas cost today? You know, you got a lot of people that come in from Virginia, West Virginia, they travel in, and, you know, they're spending, you know, how many hours a week and paying all this money for gas, you know. And so there's a heightened awareness of, like, well, how much more am I going to take? You know, my job isn't giving me a raise. And so people are really beginning to ask some of the deeper questions or delve into, you know, well, what are the causes for the situation which the country and the world is in right now? And, you know, we're here telling them what time it is. You know, we've been doing it for a really long time, and we've been right. But, yeah, just the lack of any real discussion with the presidential race is one clear thing to really organize people around, that, you know, that there isn't much of a discussion of an economic collapse. I mean, Bear Stearns blew out. That's a huge thing. I haven't heard anybody, you know, either presidential candidate, mention that, you know, directly, and what to do about that.
Many of the three.
Yeah, they're talking about, you know, Obama's, you know, trying to deal with the destruction of his campaign by the British, and, you know, Clinton, you know, she actually came out with this idea that, you know, since $30 billion was given to J.P. Morgan Chase, that $30 million should be given to the people that are now being foreclosed on, which doesn't get at the point. But, you know, that's why we're here. We're here to educate, you know, the people that are at least trying to figure this stuff out. But, yeah, to answer the question, I guess, yeah, there is a bit of more consciousness among folks.
What I'm aware of is federal senators and others saying, you've been right.
Yeah.
You've been right. You told us that there would be a so-called subprime crisis. You told us that there would be a that the financial crisis would break out into the open, and basically that the bankruptcy of Bear Stearns and the response to it demonstrates once more that we've been right. But they, in the same breath, they say, I'm not going to act the way you propose because it isn't practical, which is bullshit. It's just cowardice. But among the local officials, I mean, Kalina has shown this for Michigan in what she said, but it's generally true across the country from what I know. Since 6 days ago, the collapse of Bear Stearns, there's been local officials stepping forward all over the country to fight for the HBPA. It's so funny. I mean, the senators and congressmen who have the power to legislate the HBPA say it isn't practical. These people who have no power to legislate it find it not only practical but essential and immediately important, and they're putting themselves on the line for it in larger numbers than ever before.
Yeah, that Kalina, did you find you were in on some of the meetings then that your phone call up got set up, I presume, in Lansing?
Yeah, I attended some of the meetings. You know, they weren't all spectacular, but most of them were pretty good. Generally, the response was, yes, there is a crisis. Yes, I've been tracking the response. One meeting that we went on in particular was someone that we've been in touch with and that we've had meetings with before. It was he was someone that had been actually aware of the HBPA's being passed in both Rhode Island Senate and House of Representatives and the Alabama State House. And that actually gave him, you know, with a precedent, he said, it, you know, gave him certain, I guess, hope, or gave him certain idea that it could be moved forward in the Michigan State House. Now, he is in the minority, so, you know, he does have a certain minority mindset that he doesn't necessarily think that he can do so much. But, you know, just like a lot of people in the Midwest, you have to give them a certain sense of optimism,
right,
that they're not just part of a certain locality, but they're part of something bigger.
Yeah.
And that them being part of something national can really affect Congress, who are sitting on their hands.
Exactly.
In a nice way. And, you know, on another point, really to reiterate what Tony was saying, you know, out on the campus and really in the legislative work, the point that keeps coming up is that we keep re-illustrating that you can't rescue yourself from a crisis by working within the same parameters of the same system. So this is why it's necessary that you work within a new system. Right. I mean, this is why you're only seeing the crisis deepen.
Exactly.
And this is why it's necessary that you return to something like the American system of political economy, something that you know has worked in the past.
Right.
Something that, you know, Lyndon LaRouche has outlined with the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. That's the only thing that can save this economy. And people are actually waking up to this, you know, that Lynn was really right all along.
And that everything that's done within the present parameters to try to solve the problem actually makes it worse. Like this so-called rescue, which was a ripoff and which was illegal, Barney Frank's various legislation.
Very many different kinds.
The same thing. But all these things which are done under the present assumptions, all these steps, remedial steps, which are the competition to LaRouche, is so-called, because, just as Kalina said, because they're based on the axioms of this system. The more they do, the worse they make it.
Absolutely.
Right. And let me ask another aspect of this, to enable people to do the kind of thing you're saying, Kalina, you know, to a big shift in thinking outside what they're locked into. The this matter of Los Angeles City Council, I understand that some of these figures that Francisco told us about, Pelosi herself, Schwarzenegger, who appeared, maybe they appeared before the Bear Stearns March 16th debacle, and then they appeared after. And so this this question of using ridicule and to give people, you know, to lift people up, give them a laugh, it seems to be, really, there's a breakout all around the country because what the LIM is doing. Let me just say this, a written report that came in from the Los Angeles LIM that I happened to see about the city council quoted Schiller about the stage being able to be used as a moral institution. I will not read it all, but they said, we can expect a great share of what we have to do to fall onto the stage because the stage holds up a mirror to the most populous class in the country, the fools. And therefore, you can have, you can more deeply wound by ridicule and contempt than you can just plain old appeal to someone's conscience, you know, by tormenting them. But Francisco, you're going to go back to California. I understand you're having a statewide convention at the Democratic Party. So you have a big job to do. You have a key international figure, Nancy Pelosi, to ridicule, right?
Yeah. You know, there was this little leaflet that we drew up. It was called the Dingling Brothers Barnum and Bailey.
It's terrific. And it is on the website still.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Go into that. And people should look it up on LaRouchePack.com, right?
Well, it was at one of Barney Frank's committee meetings. He chaired the House Finance Committee. And we got out, you know, these cards, which were about half a, you know, page, probably like a 5x8 or whatever. And we got into the hands of Barney Frank himself. It showed him dressed up as a ringmaster for the circus. There was a picture of Nancy Pelosi, you know, her plastic surgery face. She was riding an elephant. And then there was a picture of Bernanke as a clown, you know. Bernanke's probably one of the most unhuman people out there. He doesn't smile, and we had to Photoshop his smile on his face. It was hilarious. You know, listen to that guy talk. He's just so dead. And it's crazy that he, you know, really is what, you know, dictates policy for the Federal Reserve pretty much. And he knows an inhuman guy like that. But we got it out to everybody. People like Maxine Waters loved it. Other people of the committee, you know, they got it, and they're like, this is the best one yet. You know, I'm going to tack this onto my wall back at the office, you know.
Lynn said that when you raise Nancy Pelosi's name in the Congress, people just start laughing spontaneously.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, you know, sooner, yeah. Nancy Pelosi, you know. it's really a fun time because it is this ridicule. You're really showing these people, like, look at what you guys have come to. You know, and there's so many, like, just paradoxes. Like, you know, Northern Rock was nationalized in England, and so you'd go into an office and say, hey, did you know the British are turning communist? You know, because this is, like, one of the things that they've been saying of the HBPA is that LaRouche is trying to nationalize the banks and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, no, hey, well, you know, look at what's going on. You know, all these things are happening with U.S. partners, and, you know, what are you guys doing? You know, you guys aren't even admitting it yet. You know, that was before the Bear Stearns thing.
Yeah, they've gone ultra-communist now, I guess.
yeah, really.
If you can.
And so you could just bring this up with you know, most of these people, and they'll react. I mean, some of them, the old stale baby boomers are all, well, you guys ask too many questions. You guys talk too much, you know. But their world is quickly fading away into the reality that we've been discussing.
You had one of Felix Rowetton selling his paper at a public-private toilet.
Public-private privy.
Oh, yeah.
Privy, $5 a minute. I understood that got a lot of response.
Yeah, actually, that was given to Rowetton himself. It was another one of those cards. It had that pay-as-you-go. It had an outhouse and Felix Rowetton holding a toilet paper, you know. And in an elevator, one of our youth members was talking to Rowetton. It's like, Mr. Rowetton, you know, so when did you decide to be, or were you born a fascist, or did you consciously make the decision to become one, you know, in life? And Roatan was like, oh, you are a very nice young man. And he was given one of the leaflets and ended up dropping it on the floor after he got out of the elevator.
Littering.
But these guys are conscious of, you know, what we're doing. You know, this HBPA is all over the country. The reason why people aren't moving is because of their belief in the you know, almighty Zeus Roatan and his people, this, you know, slime mold that exists. And that's really what the Zeus is. It's the slime mold. It's the oligarchy, you know, and they don't think they can challenge it. But here we are, you know, challenging it, being reasonable, and they do love it, you know. If people look at this thing at the Los Angeles City Council, it's just awesome, you know, what we did.
Say more if you want. I know you're a Californian if you're just dislocated in Washington.
Yeah, I kind of feel
But like who that. Else? You had Mr. Schwarzenegger, Ms. Pelosi, and did you have more people testify at the Los Angeles Council?
We had Roatan. He was dressed up in a barrel, and he was talking about how, you know, we need to privatize Los Angeles. Los Angeles would be much better if it was all privatized. And I think Wendy Gruhl, the president that day of the session, was quite I mean, they let us speak with masks on our face. That just doesn't happen. They were completely shocked. In Los Angeles, the LIM is an institution politically. We got a number of people elected to the county central committee. We got people elected to the Democratic Party state offices of the Filipino caucus, of the African American caucus, which has been, you know, said before. And, you know, we're going to be going into this convention, you know, with all this in our arsenal. You know, we're the whole Oakland local is going to be going down to San Jose. A group of folks from Los Angeles is going to be going up from Los Angeles to, you know, really reap the benefits of what we've been saying. And, you know, with some of the campaigns we've been running, you know, in California, like the recall, we said exactly everything what Schwarzenegger is now proposing. We were saying that it was George Shultz, you know, the, you know, mastermind behind Schwarzenegger. You know, who was it that Schwarzenegger thanked during the state address in California? It was George Shultz up at the gallery, you know, waving his, you know, fascist hand. And, you know, the stuff around the Social Security fight, Augusto Pinochet, people recognize what, you know, what we were saying back then. We had a major impact in stopping the Social Security from being privatized. And, you know, the parallel is direct. What's going on today with the, you know, he's trying to restructure the whole economy of California, or with the budget cuts. I mean, and look, you've got whole school districts which are having to just dole out pink slips to 25%, 30%, 50% of their personnel just so that the paperwork will go through by the time the next school year begins. When these budget cuts are implemented, they can just pick and choose who they fire.
My God.
Yeah, this is affecting everybody. The teachers don't get paid as much as they should already, and they're going to be firing a lot of these people. They're shutting down music programs. They're shutting down field trips. I mean, and personally, a lot of the field trips I had as, you know, going to public schools, like going up to the state capitol, going to the California missions, this really helped take my mind out of the little local town I was in. And this type of stuff is necessary, as I'm sure, you know, everybody else probably had the same experience of the public school education. You know, these things are necessary to actually create real citizens of a republic, which is what the United States actually is. And with the budget cuts, they're really just treating everybody like a piece of meat that you can just sort of cut off the weak ones. You know, they can't really wage a political fight anyway. And that's their approach. And we're here telling everybody that, and folks are responding. You know, that's why we got like Tony's point about how these city council members, their identity is much larger than these people in Congress.
Yeah.
You know, they're signing on to the HPPA saying there needs to be a fundamental change that happens, you know, along the lines of what LaRouche is saying with this Homeowners Demand Protection Act. And, you know, they're helping us organize. You know, we've had stiff resistance in California because of Nancy Pelosi and other of these characters. But the groundwork, you know, is being laid out for the, you know, the next generation of leaders directly because of, or directly from the LaRouche Youth Movement, but then allies that we're recruiting and organizing through city councils, through mayors and whatnot. So it's exciting. I'm super excited to go back this weekend.
Wonderful.
It's going to be awesome.
And just what you say on that school district you happen to bring up, I mean, and other levels of government functioning, you know, water districts can't buy chlorine anymore. I mean, they've run out. They're dysfunctional because of lack of money. But I think Los Angeles is one of the biggest school districts in the world. It faces a $500 million budget deficit on its own as of July 1st. And Kalina, Detroit, I understand you have, before there was some kind of Mayor Bloomberg firing of teachers, they're now, some teachers are going without pay. Is that right in Detroit that this
I heard
up?
Delayed paychecks, but I'd be interested what you know about it, Kalina.
Did you? I'm actually not in the know.
Okay.
Yeah, you were up in Lansing. Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised. There were budget concerns when we were in Lansing. A number of the meetings that we had scheduled, some of them were canceled or rescheduled because appropriations bills came in or budget meetings were randomly came up because they had to get their budgets in by a certain deadline.
Right.
I mean, it really is obvious that it's a systemic crisis. Like, talking to these people at the League of Cities and the National Association of Counties, I mean, just go through transportation for cities. You know, a lot of the preventive maintenance isn't happening for school buses these days.
Ugh.
You know, I mean, these are like vehicles that are carrying 70 people, 70 children to and from school, you know, what, 9 months out of the year. You know, healthcare, people don't have healthcare, or hospitals like DC General Hospital. You know, I've talked to people on the bus going back and, you know, from the office here to back home about DC General Hospital. You know, there's a ton of homeless people here in DC, but it is everywhere. There's, you know, Skid Row in Los Angeles where people are just being dumped from the hospitals, you know, the mental hospitals that shut down. They just dumped them out on the street and, you know, they have them fend for themselves pretty much. And that's been happening for years. And we're really at a point where there's just a complete breakdown occurring.
Exactly.
And it's, I mean, this is why, like what LaRouche has said recently, like, we're in a completely different situation after Bear Stearns. And people really need to realize what they're doing with their lives because, you know, trying to get a college diploma right now, it's like, where are you going to work? What hospital
exactly.
are you going to work at, brother? You know,
it's
what are you going to, you know, just, you're going to escape to Europe? You know, a lot of people want to go backpack to Europe and say, well, the United States, I don't want to live there. I'm going to go to Europe or whatever. It's like, well, look at the Treaty of Lisbon. They're turning fascist, you know, directly over there. They're trying to eliminate the sovereignty of countries and have a financial dictatorship, you know. And so these same themes keep coming up all over the world, you know, pretty much, all over the United States. There's really no escaping the systemic crisis. And it's not like, you know, people say, well, it's like, well, you just sound really gloomy. It's like, well, no, the whole reason why I'm telling you this is because there's a solution. You know, there's let's actually, you know, represent that legacy, which is uniquely inside of us as Americans. You know, the legacy of Franklin Roosevelt, the legacy of Lincoln, the American system, which they, you know, robbed from your history class. Well, here it is, you know, and it's a fight. You know, we're in a complete, you know, political fight, and it's a fight for the ages.
Yes, exactly.
Right. One thing that underscores what you're saying is one event, March 19th, this past week in New York City, I understand 10,000 teachers and friends of teachers rallied in the city against Mayor Bloomberg, who imposed a Schwarzenegger-type cross-the-board cut on all the schools, 1.75%, but plain old cut. And we understand the LaRouche Political Action Committee just couldn't get out enough. You know, it was pouring down rain. But if they had had 30,000 pieces of literature, they would have got them all out, showing the kind of opportunity in the midst of this misery that's being forced down until we get the right emergency actions. Let me ask one thing to any of you, Kalina or Frankie or Tony, but on this appeal to what you said about legacy or to restore people to some idea, they may not know about the American system, they may not, do you find one thing or another where it's kind of what people have called the sleeping giant phenomenon in the United States. There is a legacy there, even if it differs for people, their sense. But do you find something, Kalina, for example, you talked about being in the Midwest, that restores people to their understanding, like those who are old enough know about the Second World War and what a powerhouse the Midwest was. But you're dealing with young people, too. What do you find people respond to?
Well, I think specifically here in the Midwest, if you can really instill a sense of optimism, people, you know, especially if you're out organizing on a campus, people may not be familiar, you know, they may not have internalized the World War II generation or Franklin Roosevelt or that idea of that legacy, but they still have a sense of posterity or immortality. And Lynn really has the very, is very, I guess, don't know how correctly to put it, but Lynn is really correct in putting, Lynn has the intimate capability of conceptualizing immortality for in the youth movement. And when we go out to organize, the idea of really giving people the conception that there is something greater than just our generation, just something for us to get out. I mean, really something better than just, I hate to put it, than the baby boomer generation of pleasure and yeah. me. There is something that the youth still can latch on to and agree with that. It's the divine spark of creativity, I believe, that human beings still have. And, you know, we can still pull that out in generally all people, but youth especially still have a lot of that spark.
Frankie, you'd say the same thing, I guess.
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, a lot of it is like completely dangerous, really, to the oligarchy. You know, the fact that young people actually want a future, you know,
exactly.
And they're willing to fight for it. That's why all the investment by Bill Gates and Rupert Murdoch and all this MySpace stuff, you know. And, I mean, think about most folks now that are completely intellectually awake, you know, 18, you know, 20 or whatever, they grew up, you know, throughout the entire Bush administration. That was
exactly.
when their intellectual awakening was. And I think it's safe to say that people realize their parents are completely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they see the cities decaying. They see, you know, things aren't quite right. I mean, I think that's why, you know, people like what these guys are around the Obama campaign is doing is so appealing. You know, it's this sophistry. It's like, well, they're talking about a history. They're talking about promises, talking about a future, but they aren't really talking about anything outside of that. There's no science or rigor in any of their thinking, and I think that's what's letting people down, you know, that are also a part of that campaign,
yeah.
is that they aren't really talking about the financial collapse and what's actually what's going to be the mechanism to actually change the situation here. You know, you talk to people about, you know, what was the wealth generating mechanisms, you know, what, 20, 30 years ago, people working at factories, you know, they see it out there in Detroit, how all that's been taken down until, you know, gambling casinos called, you know, in Wall Street or, you know, the Chicago trade, you know, all these different, the where we generate wealth today is, you know, not in reality. We're not producing anything. And people realize that. You just got to get them to think and capture them, really capture their imagination with the question. Because that's really what's going to save the country and the world, and it's
exactly.
what's always been. It's our imagination, it's our creativity,
exactly.
And I'm confident that we're doing. I mean, I've been organizing for 5 years. What else would you be doing? You know, trying to be a teacher that's getting fired, or you know, being one of these bloodsuckers that are trading, you know, on, you know, for Goldman Sachs or Bear Stearns.
That's right.
You know, yeah. So.
Yeah, let me ask you one, well, you may have some other things to bring out in the remaining 6 minutes, and I will say again to people that they should get ready for the next EIR that will be posted on the website on LaRouchePub.com, but what must be done to avert the greatest crash in history. But people should also be contributing, donating, circulating any of these pieces of ammunition, the leaflet, "Doom has struck, three steps to survival." Also, the LaRouche Political Action Committee is getting out LaRouche's March 12th webcast on averting doom. That was before the Bear Stearns incident. I think they're going to print 150,000 of these. So the relevant websites, please check those. And also, Francisco, I think March 30th, the LaRouche show, we hope to have you or someone else with Harley or Quincy or various people who might be available direct from San Jose.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Okay? Great. That'll be the March... Oh, no, I made a mistake. It's March 29th. March 29th. I gave the wrong date. But count on that. People should plan to listen to that. But among the other things that's cropped up, the LaRouche Youth Movement, one of the war room leaders put out what she called, a kind of inoculation. There's also some insidious stuff. Some of it's based in Seattle for some really evil kind of instigator networks directly connected out of London to have what they call Recreate 68 to take advantage of those who are vulnerable or feeling the demoralization or, have an overexposure to Facebook or MySpace and create some... violent capability at the convention or before. Tony, you may know something about it, or Kalina or Francisco, you may have encountered.
Frankie, do you? You probably know more about it than I do.
Well, I know that there's going to be a whole crew of LaRouche Youth Movement members there in D.C., or in Denver when the committee's going to happen. I don't know in particular, like the specifics of some of the stuff was, it was out of the Northwest, but I really do think there's going to be some major twists and turns with the world situation before the convention comes around. And that's really what we got to get people to focus on. Because, I mean, like I said, both of these candidates, they're not really in reality. I mean, we've had a pretty lengthy discussion about a lot of material, but it's this discussion that's necessary for the highest office in the land, you know? I don't know if it's they don't understand what the presidency is, and or like I asked a few people, it's like, well, why do you think the founding fathers had the foresight to give Congress the power to, you know, over the financial institutions?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was the reason? And you know, some of the responses like, well, I don't think Congress could have foreseen this crisis. It's like, no, but they did. They saw, you know, they created like this boundary condition, you know, based on a principle of government protecting the general well-being of the population and the posterity of that population.
Right.
And that's what needs to be addressed, you know, by these presidential, you know, figures. It's like I heard Obama talk about, yeah, when I have a meeting, I'm going to have the biggest chair in the room because I'll be president, right? I mean, Clinton...
It's a Charlie Chaplin movie.
yeah. It's a big joke for a lot of these people, I would say. And it's a joke that they don't even understand pretty much. As candidates themselves, and we really just got to push this discussion of the financial blowout, Bear Stearns. You know, we've won huge battles against Bloomberg and Schwarzenegger, but we have to win this war because if we don't, you know, we're all gonna go to the British Empire hell, you know, along with them. So I would say that to that question.
Oh, yeah, I think the twists and turns are almost by the hour that you're describing. Not even, you know what I mean, over
yeah, it's
the
very
weeks
well
ahead.
Said. You can't linearly project from now to the August convention or anything else. A lot of things will be completely different.
Mm-hmm. Right. One thing on this, what you're characterizing here, the historic, the complete break, kind of break point that we're in, it's not even a continuation of hyperinflation. It's hyperbolic. I mean, we're seeing this. Internationally, there have been some evidence, for example, out of Moscow, where they say that war danger is not event-driven anymore, like in Tibet or somewhere else. It's just being caused. It's clearly a pattern.
It's true. Very good. I didn't know that.
One of the professors at what they call the Diplomatic Academy to train diplomats that you've seen Georgia in 2003, Ukraine in 2004, now give us a break.
Yeah.
It's clearly a pattern.
Kosovo, yeah. He said it's basically, in effect, he said it's Yeah, it's not local. It's being done by the same people. The same people are pulling the strings and doing the same thing.
So it turns us back around here that if we shift the situation in the United States, there we can move. We can make the history. I see we're running out of very few seconds. So Francisco, why don't you close out the show by encouragement?
Yeah, I would say support what we're doing. I mean, if you're out and you can't, do the type of be-all, end-all stuff that we're doing, you should support us with, a contribution. Get some literature out. There's something everybody can do, and it's more than you're thinking right now if you're just sitting there listening for the first time. And so, we have the state convention. There's huge developments all around the world that are happening. Dive into this stuff. And, LaRouche he's been the authority for a long time on this stuff, and look at what he's been saying, and look at his record, I guess you can say.
That's great. And we're only quitting because of time, and so we're closing out March 22nd, 2008, LaRouche Show, and I thank you, Kalina, Francisco, Tony Papert, and you're right, doom will not prevail. Civilization can prevail. Do listen March 29 from 3 to 4 Eastern Time, U.S., and thank you, everyone. This is Marcia Mary Baker.